Have a question or need how-to advice? Just ask Meta AI. Whether you need to summarize your class notes or want to create a recipe with the ingredients you already have in your fridge, Meta AI has the answers. You can also research topics, explore interests, and so much more. It's the most advanced AI at your fingertips. Expand your world with Meta AI. Now on Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Messenger.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
This episode of Untold Stories is sponsored by Paraswap. You'll hear more about them later on in this episode.
All right. What is up, everyone? I am Charlie Schrem, and you are listening and watching another epic episode of Untold Stories, where twice a week together, we get to dive deep with some of crypto's most influential leaders, brightest crayons on the box, those who I meet along the way, who we become friends. We get to do some crazy things together. And as long as you don't fight the universe of life and, you know, kind of how everything works, you just go with the flow. We've talked about the flow state so many times on the show, but it's so important to me. And I just want to give a thank you to you guys. Before I introduce the guests, first of all, thank you those who are leaving us amazing reviews. I really appreciate it. When you leave a review, I end up, if it's like appropriate, I read it on the episode. But I want to give a shout out to some countries that have kept us in the top 100 charts this week: Estonia, Chile, Argentina, India, you guys, Poland, the Philippines, Egypt, the UK. We're all over Europe, all over Italy, South Africa, Israel. You guys, well, I'm in the top 50 in all these places. It's been so much fun talking to all you guys: Ireland, Sweden, the Netherlands. You know, just let all your friends know about the show so we can just be in the top one of every country in the world, because Untold Stories is the best. But without further ado, I want to introduce someone who's become a close friend of mine. We're coworkers now, working on this super cool. I never would be able to. My dream job has always been to be like an entrepreneur in residence and be a VC. I always felt that was something that you would attain once you've had enough failures and maybe one or two successes. You can get to that coveted place. And to hear talk about like both of our failures is my good friend Chris Pizzo. Chris, thanks for coming on Untold Stories today.
Oh, Charlie, thanks for having me, man. I was just telling you before, you know, I'm super humbled to be part of this. I think the world of you. And it's funny, there's no direct path to get here. My story is no different than that. And I think that's what's really interesting about investors, but not just investors, because without the entrepreneurs pushing the limit of what can be done, or really what can't be done, you know, we wouldn't have a job. Before we get going, I really want to commend those trying out there, as they're really putting their ideas forward, and their families are supporting them, and they're all on that ship together. And I think Web3 is a tremendous way to really accelerate that community movement and generate those that value, redistribute that value creation back to these builders where it should be. So with that, really, really happy to be here and excited to talk about some things.
There's an elephant in the room that I have to ask you about. But before I do, I want to let everyone know what you're up to. You are just announcing a new fund that you're the general partner, Druid Ventures. I'm excited to be a part of it myself, working with the team, the investment team, and you know, helping put deals together and meeting so many of these cool entrepreneurs and companies down here in the Tampa Bay region. It's a boutique investment firm doing Web3, Bitcoin, crypto, all sorts of things. You have a background working with companies at the Embark Collective, Jeff Vinnick's outfit over there. You that's where you met some good friends of mine, Gabe and Rosa. And then previously you were a vice president at SCP & Co., which is one of the sponsors of, or the sponsor of Druid Adventurism. And what's cool is that you've put together like an epic fund, like an epic, I don't even know, that should be the name of a fund, like an epic fund of sports players and NASCAR drivers and crypto folks and Bitcoin OGs. And like we had our event last week, I felt like there were, it was like an old OG Bitcoin event. Everyone was there kind of being themselves. But before we get into like so many different topics, can't believe it. Tom Brady. Like, I can't believe it. No way. I'm like in the bathroom yesterday at a tiki bar and some guy walks in. He's like, Tom Brady's coming back. And I'm like, no way. No way. I didn't believe him. He's like, you don't believe me? And I'm like, I got to pee first.
No, 100%. It's funny. So, you know, one of our legal counsel actually is really good, close friends with a whole bunch of Buccaneers. And there's been some talks in the weeds, so to speak. And, you know, nothing obviously materializes till it's done. But when I heard about it, you know, you think it's gossip. And then when it finally happens, it's like, oh my God, Tom Brady, like, you know, and then there's the statistics, basically every other year he wins the Super Bowl. And so by him not winning last year, now he's geared up to win this year. And so look, the whole community, you know, couldn't be more excited about it, I think. And kind of going to your point about, you know, being based here in Tampa Bay, we've been vastly underserved and underinvested in for a really long time. Florida typically, and, you know, as a whole, but Tampa Bay especially, right? Little brother to Miami.
Always living in the shadow.
Yeah, we live in the shadow, a big shadow, but that's totally changing. And, you know, I was listening to another partner of ours in your podcast, Scott Melker. Hey, Scott, appreciate you joining. But, you know, you guys are talking about, of course, COVID's terrible. But we couldn't agree more that it's totally decentralized entrepreneurs, which really, you know, fits the ethos of crypto. But they're all relocating into really kind of tax advantageous places that are beautiful to live. Check both boxes for Tampa Bay, right? And you see all the talent moving here. And there's just like a really palpable energy that, you know, at Druid, we'd like to take advantage of. You know, time is your friend here. Timing is everything. You mentioned Gabe and Rosa at Block Spaces doing some incredible stuff there, both in the managed node infrastructure, but also on their kind of productized platform for companies to plug and play with different blockchains that fit their needs, right? So they've been real trailblazers. They've been doing Bitcoin meetups since 2012. And then a good friend of mine, Michael O'Rourke, who I believe you've also interviewed at Pocket Network, shout out to those folks too. They've been doing unbelievable things, finding a real pain point. You know, with Infura plugging into AWS, so it's really centralized, and you know, they hit about $1.5 billion market cap, come down since they've gotten on a couple exchanges, but at the end of the day, they're stronger than ever. You know, the middleware components, kind of that chain agnostic piece, is so exciting to us, and the infrastructure plays, right? The picks and shovels here, and we can get into details and things like that, but, you know, thinking about investment theses and being able to bounce it off our cap table, which you've alluded to, is really the best part of this to me, right? Because it's emblematic of Web3. We wanted to democratize access to a venture vehicle that's typically been prohibited because of this huge moat put up by insiders. You know, the rich get richer. So by bringing people like you on, Scott Melker, Steve Ehrlich, the CEO of Voyager Digital, who's been incredible, you know, and they also have a fund that's bigger than ours that we like to work with. But a couple of football players, I guess before that, I can mention, we got a bunch of play to earn, proof of play folks, tokenomics people, and all through the tech stack. But on top of the community members that can really help, you know, educate the masses, so to speak, which is a huge pain point here. But NFL, NBA, a couple of NASCAR guys, part owners of Milwaukee Bucks, and then a whole bunch of actually individuals in VC private equity that are looking for exposure, that want to learn more. And are genuinely curious. And I think that's what's really exciting about it, because this asset class, while a bunch of people can say, oh, it's all scammers and everything, that's too easy, right? But when you see where this talent is going, you know, we're taking, by we, I mean the whole Web3 kind of industry push here, we're poaching talent from Wall Street. We're poaching talent from different hedge funds. You know, I'm talking to one of our investors. I mentioned the part owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. you know, the son is Zach Dinan, who's an incredible guy. He was just, he's a Harvard Business School now, Harvard undergrad, incredibly smart. Came in second, runner up for his blockchain president stuff. But what's happening is all these students are flowing into these early stage tech companies or these VCs because they know that that this is the future. And where the alpha is generated next 10 years, it's here, man.
That is so true. It's like they just want to, they want to go out there. And it's like slim pickings. You can almost go out and it's harder to hire people now. It's every person we talk to, oh, we're hiring. Yeah, you and everyone else. It's like you got to go now when they're in high school or college and try to get contracts with somebody's computer scientists and stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So it's funny, right? Because it's part of my diligence process and talking to people. And I do want to get into that a little bit. But it's really how are things changing, right? Like, how do you plan on capturing and retaining talent in this ever increasing competitive market? And that's a really hard question in and of itself. And it's very telling of the team, the way they think about things. But there's no right answer there necessarily. But community acquisition as well is a huge part. But I mean, obviously technology is super important too, where the way it all fits and how you see things differently, the scalable components, the different integration factors. But really, to me, it's about the people. I mean, we can talk about technology all day, right? But it's really about,
You know what I just realized is such a watershed moment that I think crypto culture did for just the wider startup culture community, or even forget startup culture, just like the whole Western idea of working for a company that you don't have to like. Like it used to be, you can work for a company and just not like your company, but still like the organization or like the people that you work with. But it's like, you don't like the company itself. You don't agree with what they're doing. You don't use their products or you think it's shit or something like that. Now, if you work for a company, you are almost like expected to be a super fan, a super follower, wear the company's t-shirt, swag. Angela. Yeah, like what 90s company gave away swag? Like imagine the movie Office Space. He hated the company.
Staplers?
Yeah, staplers. It's like, but you have, it's interesting how that completely, so now these companies, when they go to job fairs, they're like, it's not just a Glassdoor became such a big thing. Or what's that other job, that job site that you can read into to how what it's like working for that company or whatever. We've completely changed that. Do you think the Biden executive order that came through last week was a huge, was anyone waiting for that? Were there institutions that were on the sidelines that were kind of waiting for that, whatever that was?
So it's a great question, because what was delivered to me, it was good in a way that they're thinking about. They're letting us know that they're thinking about it. You know, regulation needs to come in some capacity here, right? There's a lot of institutions on the side. But at the end of the day, to me, what I'm thinking here is the government just wants their piece. And they want to make sure that they're doing right by the people. Agree or disagree here, they're going to take their time. I think you said it best yourself. They're not stupid. They're very smart. And they want to be methodical and prudent about it. But at the same time, with that, there's a double-edged sword where they can stifle innovation. And then these innovators, this talent goes to other countries to work on these protocols, these projects, you name it. But I'm hopeful it's sooner than later. And you can't apply, you know, regulations and rules from technology that happened, you know, 70 years ago, 60 years ago, 50 years, even 10, 15 years ago now, in this ever, you know, accelerating environment. I mean, you open something up and you see all this new technology that comes out, it's impossible to keep up. Again, back to the cap table, that's why this collective brain trust is, to me, you need that community to create basically rising tides, right? You need to have those different people that see things differently to be able to get to a good investment or be able to help these companies. And I know that I went around the question here, but yes, I think people are waiting for regulation. People are very nervous about the accounting practices here. You know, what happens in the NFT transfers and that's why we.
Oh, yeah. Airdrops and staking and mining. There's so many like different. I just want like clarity, you know.
We all do. But at the end of the day, I mean, there, I think the look back period will be fine if you have good intentions and you're. I don't want to say following a book because there's not necessarily a book to follow, but have good business hygiene and track your stuff and aren't trying to scam people, right? If you can, in good conscience, do some KYC, and if the government asks, like, you know, we're fine with it. But if you can't, like, the scammers won't do that.
That's an interesting thing you said, business hygiene. It's, I want to get into that topic a little bit. I've been learning so much going through the due diligence of a lot of these companies and these projects with you, because there you get these companies that are already potentially making money with $100 million in TVL or value locked in their DeFi project, and it's like it's a brilliant solution and idea, but it's like the company itself isn't really investable, or there's no business hygiene, if you will. You know, going back from the 90s era LLCs to the DAOs of today, at the end of the day, when you have an organization of people that are doing business together, no, whatever way you want to skin a cat, it's an organization of business. Like, do you think there are some things like that just kind of like make your head like, oh, because the people listening to this show are running these companies, these businesses, and they'll go and they'll meet a VC, and then they'll never get feedback as to why they didn't pass the due diligence or whatever. Working with you, I'm learning so much on the other side. It's the same thing. I'm in the filmmaking world now, and I get to interface with distributors and Netflix and Hulu, and I'm learning actually what they're buying. So now I can go out and make another movie and know that it'll get distributed. But it's like, what? Give us the inside scoop or the untold stories, that some things that people can do right now and just kind of clean themselves up. Because we're, you know, now is the time that you guys are investing. These are the moments. It's not during the bull markets. It's during the bear markets.
100%, right? I mean, that's where the alpha is generated. And, you know, you could hate venture, you could hate private investors, you can hate that stuff. But at the end of the day, I think we work in lockstep to continue fueling this, right? There's a mass exodus in bear markets with public capital, let's put it that way. But the private funds, you know, like hopefully Druid Ventures, you know, we have a tremendous pipeline of some really awesome projects. I'm going to take a step back in the way like I kind of got here, because it kind of shows how I think about things is, you know, being a health tech founder in 2012 when the Affordable Care Act came out, had this huge pilot scoped out. And if that were to work, we would have potentially received some good VC private equity money. We got rug pulled from a distribution partner who was being acquired, and we had no idea. I went over and worked for a family office for 3.5 years as the sole associate. I did all the underwriting for the early stage deals. We did some fast casual restaurants and commercial real estate. But to your point, what I like to do is talk to them, talk through them about the way we look at things, whether it's, you know, again, about team, what's the size of the opportunity with the total addressable market, use the product if it's available, talk to customers, look at traction, you know, ask the why now is super important. What do you see? You know, what do you see that's different? The community's huge, and we can get tokens in a bit later. But I wanted to take that and go work and help coach startups. And that's why I worked for Jeff Finnick's group here in Bar Collective. Because what too many times you see investors just either ghost people, or they drag their feet along and won't tell you what they need. Yeah. And that's just a crappy investor. Life's too short to work with people you don't like. So from my perspective, it's let's ask the tough questions. Let's get there. And if it's a no for us, Charlie, I mean, I'd like to be as quick of a no as possible, because in the investment game, raising capital for an entrepreneur is
the worst.
It's the worst, right? Because it's the whole distraction from building a business. And for us, like, we want to help them get there. And where are the holes? Like, too many investors try to think at the same time. They ask these questions and it's like, all right, write off, totally uninvestable. The way I look at it is if we identify some holes and we can plug them with some of our cap table, our community resources here, like, let's go. You know, like, let's work together. Let's be open and transparent. Too many people try to lie or hide or just run away, quite frankly. And so we want to be as open kimono as possible. Say, these are the things we look for. Here you are today to get to an investable level. Let's see these things. Let's work together. But on the other side of the spectrum, you know, we're talking to some companies, you know, or some companies are out there, and I'm not throwing any under the bus, but they're looking for 10, 20, 30 million at $50 to $100 million valuation and have no product, no traction, have no community. And they think because we're in crypto that that's warranted. And you got to look at it differently. You got to think, and so this goes to a KKR thing, do the dogs eat the dog food? But really, is the community enjoying what I'm building? Do I have a solution here that fits a problem? If they're building a solution that fits a personal problem for them and there's a market's huge, that is awesome, because we know that they live it. They live in this pain and they're figuring it out. but again, different flavors. But it's the investor should always give feedback. Time is a constraint here, but to me, when the time is spent together, you owe it to each other to talk. Yeah. What do you like? What do you not like?
It's so true. I've seen like so much. It's not about talent. It's more about passion and grit. These people who wanna get this done. I love the entrepreneurs in this space, especially the ones that come from some of the craziest places and have some crazy upbringings. We've had them all on the show, but you mentioned something I want to go back to. It's the typical VC model didn't include tokens, and kind of putting that aside for a second, the typical VC model was like your first cash flow or your first like anything would be 5 years down the road. And that gave investors like the ability to relax and to allow for like R&D without breathing down the neck of the entrepreneurs that they need to make profit in the first year, two, even three. But now we're going to be living in a completely tokenized world. We all know it. We all see it's coming. There are those who want to like disregard it. You know, we're going to be the way to access public capital and have like a market cap, if you will, is going to be the future. Is that going to be a positive or a negative for investors or even for entrepreneurs who sometimes need a few years to build like some of the best companies in the world? Hell, Twitter is not even profitable yet. I don't even think it's been around for 20 years.
No, it's a great question. And it's funny because the private markets are super frothy and we're seeing, you know, a lot of public turbulence and, you know, in terms of public equities, also the crypto markets, all the public cryptos going on. But with private, all that frothiness in the private market, they have to put their money to work. And typically in the venture model, they find, you know, not unlike this, you know, they find a great team. Maybe they've done it before. If they have, you know, shut up, take my money. And there's a big herd approach too. So if you have a good kind of flagship or blue chip investor coming in, the rest of the investors will just pour in no diligence. What happens is you get overinflated valuations.
Yeah, and I know that.
Valuations, right? I mean, we've seen it in the health tech markets too. We have a $230 million digital health SPAC, looking for a target. But the issue was that we came into is that these companies doing $10 million in revenue are looking for $1 billion valuation. And the growth's not really there even, but they have this funding and need to grow into it. And I encourage entrepreneurs that are listening here, don't take the highest term sheet, the most valuable term sheet. I'm not saying don't take it. Don't take it unless you do your homework and you believe that they're the right investor and this is the right amount of capital you need because you need to grow into that valuation. On the token side of things gets really interesting because the market really sets that. I mean, looking past private sales, things like that. And I think that'll change over time where the investors that are helping shore up the network, whether it's running nodes, whether it's participating, they're going to be the ones that are allowed in the round. Will they come in a vehicle like a venture group? I don't know. I think a lot of them could be DAOs. I think venture in the future, there's no reason it couldn't be DAOs, right? But with DAOs, you know, you also have to be very conscious, messing those words up today, about the governance protocols there and how, you know, typically sometimes when it gets to a head, there could be five or so actors that maybe, I don't want to say colluding, but you have that possibility that they could be pushing the boundaries that really is beneficial to themselves and not necessarily the community. So we're in a great place now. The liquidity of these tokens, the way that they have utility, and if they don't have utility, then we're not investing in them. Really powers an ecosystem here and can almost turn, like thinking about Pocket with developers, how it turns a sunk cost into actually a profit rewarding mechanism, passive income over time. It's remarkable what could be changed. So I think the token economy is going to change a lot of things. I think a lot of hard assets now, looking at, you know, houses and cars and all the stuff with title that can happen. And the digital ownership of it for the, you know, obviously transferability, but the provenance to determine the origin, the creator, and in the art world, you know, if you can actually, you know, that you can actually plug into a smart contract, here's some value that goes back to the artist, like that's awesome. And what does that do to the future? How do these people eventually, maybe that gets them out of a hole that they've been in and can give them some real income to reinvest in founders and artists doing this stuff. because I don't want to beat a dead horse with a, you know, we're like Silicon Valley here, but what really happened in Silicon Valley is a whole bunch of tech nerds made money and reinvested in tech nerds. And that's really what did it.
It's like a very, very good point. So it's like multi-generational cycles almost of like constant over and over reinvesting in the same thing. And you see that in crypto, like the same Bitcoin entrepreneurs, and no one realizes that the founders of Ethereum are also the same early founders of Ethereum founded. You have Cardano, you have some of the earliest blockchains. Why am I blanking right now? It's crazy. There's so, yeah, like there's a...
there's a lot now.
Yeah, there's like four different blockchains that came from the early Ethereum founders that I'm like completely blanking on right now, and I'm going to get killed later, but it doesn't matter. But you have like, it's just over and over and over again, the same type of people. And that's one of my favorite things is like kind of seeing them. But not everything should be a DAO. And I kind of want to know what you think should be a DAO, because like, for example, you have a fund, not every... You know, very few people are involved in the decision-making process. While there could be tons of different investors and partners, same thing with making a film. You don't want to have everyone involved in the creative process that are the DAO holders, because you'll never make a good movie that way. There's a reason that the people involved in the movie-making process have done it over and over and over again. You should see in some of those meetings, I don't even say anything. And it's like, Charlie, why are you so quiet? It's like, this is not my world yet. Maybe in the future it is. But you guys know what you're doing, and I'll just help put the deals together. But it's the same type of thing.
Yeah, it really is, right? And too many cooks in one kitchen. You know, at the end of the day, too, it's the diligence process and the time frame here as well. I mean, you could have a whole bunch of really smart people talking about one opportunity for a year,
yeah.
Right? I mean, there's always more diligence you can do. At the end of the day, there's a velocity component here, and that's why, to us, we've really refined this diligence process that you're talking about. You know, what do we need to hit? Like what are clear cut no's and everything? And to go back to the question, what is appropriate for a DAO as a venture fund? I think that we're going to see some interesting models. I think there's going to be a lot of people that try it. But to your point though, too, again, too many cooks in one kitchen, you really need a couple, like a committee at the top or something just to push something through at the end of the day. Because it can just drag too long, and it's not fair to the entrepreneurs as well, right? You know, they're in a time crunch too. There's a capital arms race out here, trying to raise money, whether it's through tokens, equity, a combination thereof. But I do think that there will be a lot of interesting technologies integrated into DAOs and for DAOs to build upon. I think it's in its infancy, and we're looking at investing in some companies that can help with that too.
Sorry to interrupt your regular scheduled programming, but I wanted to tell you guys that if you're using PancakeSwap, Uniswap, DYDX, SushiSwap, you're doing it wrong. You need to be using PowerSwap, because PowerSwap is a user interface, a decentralized smart contract platform that sits on top of all of these. And when you go to PowerSwap or untoldstories.link/PowerSwap, because they're refunding your gas, if you go there, then you'll be able to, on top of Ethereum, Binance Smart Chain, and Polygon, look for the best prices for your tokens and swap and do everything in one predefined transaction on chain. Instead of having to do the approval to this token, to that token, to do all these different things, PowerSwap does it all for you. It's decentralized. They just released their API version 5 that you can see everything. It's all open source. Very cool stuff. untoldstories.link/PowerSwap. If you're using any of the other decentralized protocols, you're doing it wrong, because you need to be using the routing, beautiful PowerSwap routing system, and it's fully decentralized too. It's gorgeous. I'll talk to you guys soon.
I know you're not like a macroeconomist or anything, but do you have any comments on the political or like macro global headwinds that are occurring, and how that could affect our crypto community or the type of things that could really change that? I know just today they talked about raising the interest rates, and that's going to slow things down. But I mean, a lot of, you know, when you have on NPR on the radio doing inflation 101 for people, it's like, what world are we living in right now? And is this something that's going to be a year or two? Are we looking at 5 years of this, like, just volatile world? I mean, take me back to 2019, people keep saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, at a high level, I'm not a macro economist. But when you see 80% of the US dollars in circulation printed in the past, you know, what, 24, 26 months, it's definitely, raises eyebrows. 7.9% inflation rate. You know, we look over here, obviously the war in Ukraine, what that does with the crude oil. And it's not just over there too. I mean, it was here too, cutting off our own pipelines, things like that. And not that this is, you know, blue, red, anything in between. It's just talking high level. But it's interesting what you see, what came out of the donations to Ukraine. You see how a blockchain really serviced this, and there's been over 50 million donated, and you see where these use of funds are going, and they're really saving lives. And I think it's fascinating, right? I mean, you think about global countries, you see Venezuela, you see
it's crazy.
All these countries, really, yeah, really. I mean, even the US dollar now, I mean, 80% is just absolutely crazy. So to me, you know, a sound money, self-sovereignty, are pretty interesting aspects, or pretty interesting, you know, technologies to look into. There's no reason that people shouldn't, you know, pick up, you know, at least whatever it is, look up something on the internet, read some articles, and say, hey, maybe I should just explore Bitcoin, crypto a little bit more to see if it's appropriate. Yeah. If not, then that's fine. But it really does have all those macroeconomic, you know, basically wrapped around everything. And to me, it's bullish for long-term implications. But you know, if we all had a glass ball, we wouldn't have to work.
Bitcoin and crypto have been veering off in opposite directions, or especially over the last few years. You see crypto as an industry. Bitcoin just wants to be Bitcoin. And that's what I love about it. Just wants to be, like you said, sound money, censorship resistance. We've talked about this from a fund perspective. But do you think there'll be, and there is industry around Bitcoin, and there's amazing development, and it's been happening in a really great way. But the kind of break shit world of DeFi and then fix it later, that's crypto. Do you think there'll be like a relationship between Bitcoin and crypto going forward? Do you think people are going to actually want some of those things that you can do with tokens on Bitcoin, will people, or do you think it's going to further separate?
So it's interesting. You have a pretty polarized community there with the Bitcoin maximalists, and then you have basically everyone else, big Ethereum, big DeFi stuff. But at the end of the day, you look at what the strongest protocol is. You look at the proof of work that's done there. There's nothing stronger than the Bitcoin, the Bitcoin layer one. Right. It's remarkable. And I do think that we'll see a lot of interesting sidechain projects come up. You know, we've talked about MintLayer being one. They're a fascinating group, changing some stuff that, you know, will actually help them long term foundationally scale. But it will be interesting. There's a lot of talk about energy consumption and sidechains help with that. But to me, this energy consumption debate is.
It's such a red herring.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? Because at the end of the day, that's going to drive so much innovation into better, efficient energy. It's just nuts that you're using the whole basically energy grid of friggin' London or something. It doesn't matter. It's going to get better. It's Moore's Law. It'll get smaller and better. I think that we're going to see some really interesting projects on Bitcoin. I think people will use it. I think that over time, you know, once we hit that last, I don't want to say last peak, but I don't think it's going to become super volatile. I think it'll flatten out and be a nice store of value and be able to peg to, you know, certain things and collateralize different assets through that network and get loans from it. And it's already happening. But I do think that Bitcoin has a lot of potential still that people are basically writing off and saying, nah, we got to go to proof of stake. And obviously proof of stake has its own issues, right?
Yeah.
With too many bad actors or too many coins or something can just screw the network up.
Well, not only that, it's you need some of those. People always ask me for the most simplest like way I describe permissionless and permission blockchains. If you need to own some of the blockchain's coins in order to participate in that blockchain's voting or protocol or issuance of new coins or do anything, then that is not a permissionless system. With Bitcoin, you just need some energy and some hardware and software that there's so freely available anywhere in the world, and you can do it over Tor. You can do it completely. You can mine completely anonymously if you want to. That is a permissionless system. And I don't know of any other. It's like So people need to read the Bitcoin white paper, need to go back and go to NakamotoInstitute.org and really, really understand, like read all of Satoshi's writings, really understand why Satoshi invented Bitcoin and look at a lot of the writings and the ramifications that he talked about what happened. This is an experiment. It's a very, very long-term horizon experiment. Like him and Hal Finney talked about like checkpoints in the network at the year 2035, 2150. We won't even be living in some of these checkpoints down the road. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of years because any money doesn't actually last more than a few hundred years anyways. So that is the experiment of Bitcoin. 500 years, something else will replace Bitcoin. There'll be enough time, but it's the same thing like what happens with the dollar an hour or whatever it is. It's just a function of human evolution. But yeah, I mean, going back to that, got to spend a lot of time reading all like the what's and the whys. And because a lot of this stuff is very, very, very short term. And so I'm going to ask you about some of like the biggest opportunities, but it's like going back to some of these developers in school, they're looking out there and they're like, shit, I want to build everything I can that the current world uses on old software. I want to rebuild using this blockchain technology that Satoshi invented. What can I do? What are some like crazy opportunities where there are middlemen just taking copious amounts of money that you think is going to be redone on blockchain rails? You see it in the insurance going through even like home equity lines of credit and mortgages, and that whole industry is going to change. It's insane.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And it's a funny question, right? Like how far do you zoom out? But to me, anything that's been done that is essentially an asset can be repurposed and put on a blockchain in some capacity. Anything. Should they all be? Not necessarily. Yeah. I think there's a lot of interesting layer two, right? There's a lot of interesting stuff with ZK rollups, stuff to kind of batch things and then put it back on the blockchain for one transaction. But we're going to be getting there and it'll be easier. But I mean, anything to do with our personal lives that we've always done with kind of any type of database or any type of financing mechanism. So money, information, any kind of ownership, you name it, man. I mean,
identity, yeah.
Identity. I mean, even like going through airports. I mean, going through any type of school environment. It's what could be done and how do you make it in a way that's easily digestible for people? I mean, it's going to be really exciting and there's going to be so many different ways to get people excited about education too. From kind of putting things on the blockchain and transferring value to them to basically like Duolingo with real money or something. I mean, it's unfathomable. And like you said, you know, 500 years, yeah, that's some stuff there, but we're accelerating like crazy right now. Again, COVID really accelerated this, but the rest of this technology, it's just feeding off each other in such a good way. Who knows how the world's going to operate in 10 years, like self-driving cars. How does that work on a blockchain? How does that work with other kind of, you know, talking to other cars and being able to, I don't know, maybe borrow energy credits or something when you're low on gas? It's just crazy to me. And that's why I like partnering up with people like these really bright entrepreneurs that see things differently, that challenge the status quo. And again, I let off with this, but without them, like, you know, the venture folks wouldn't even be in this position. But I want to say one thing before we kind of get to the next point. It's you see all these venture funds that typically haven't even had any type of real capital allocated. I mean, obviously the Andreessens of the world, they've been pouring money in. Katie Hahn left to start her own thing. But going down even Bain, right? Bain Capital Ventures, yeah. Just $560 million in crypto all the way down to liquid tokens. I mean, Hack VC raised $200, another $500 is coming on. They're seeing things here. And it's not just short-term money grab. Sure, you can make a lot of money, but what's to come and what if this does work? It's going to open doors and it's going to change people's lives and honestly just make the world more global. Maybe that's not the right word. I don't want to say like flat, but to make it more...
easily accessible.
Yeah, easily accessible and connected.
I really miss the connected days of like 5 or 6 years ago. I felt like we were going more globalized, and you brought up like the airport problem. Oh man, just traveling during COVID across a border I felt like I'd like a wad of paperwork between the vaccination and the recent tests. Like when push comes, first of all, it's a huge racket with the testing and then having to show your test just to like the the airline attendant who's now become like an enforcement official. It's just, it's really insane that, but it, the problem is, there's never been a huge jump to like decentralize all that data, is because all that data, first of all, is created in real time. There's a lot of forgery and counterfeiting that could happen, but also it's like, we just don't want to give all that stuff up to like some massive centralized database. But in the airport thing, you know, a simple act of like traveling from one country to another with a layover in another country, I had to show my paperwork to like six different people, go through security three or four times, multiple border controls. I mean, constant. If somehow there was a way to like take that, and you're going to see different companies start to work with the state driver's license issuing as an NFT, because then you can unlock certain things and prevent forgery, et cetera. It's just, I think you're going to see definitely it go down that road.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It'll be interesting to see kind of these large conglomerates working to incorporate this, because it's not in their DNA to decentralize. It's in their literally like almost a mandate to centralize things. It could be distributed in some capacities, but really at the end of the day, they want to own it. And make no mistake, you know, I mean, I'm looking at the Facebook rebrand of Meta, and we can all talk about Ready Player One and yada, yada, yada. But does anybody really want to be in the Zuckerverse, right? It's a really interesting thing, because they have all the tools, they have the community to some extent. But I'd be weary for Apple. I mean, Apple's in everybody's pockets, on everyone's wrists. They're all connected stuff. Don't be surprised if they're a dark horse here. I mean,
they're quiet. Usually the quiet ones are the ones you got to watch out for.
That's right. Yeah, they're not changing their name to Meta Apple.
Oh my God.
Yeah, right. But you got to believe that they're going at it in the future of business. I mean, Microsoft pouring in here, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens in metaverse stuff. I mean, some of us are already living in it through work with Zoom. It's crappy. It's primitive. It's, you know, but if you were to just throw a Meta on something as a startup, and you think I'm sitting in my Meta seat with my Meta helmet, and you think you're worth, you know, $100 billion now and don't have anything, like, you got to think again. Investors are getting smarter. People are getting smarter. Scammers are also getting smarter, but luckily we have the community to sift through that together.
Are there any classes in university that, or even high school, right? Forget university, high school, that you think that they should be teaching that they're not?
Well, anything with kind of self-sovereignty and personal finance, you name it, man.
It's humility training.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question. So my son's two, a daughter that's 9 months. My son's two, though, and is just fascinated, and every other kid you see are fascinated with computers, how things work. I certainly was. By the time I got a Game Boy, that was like the first thing that I could get my hands on. But these kids are going to be moving at a pace so much faster than we were with technology. They're going to be coding so much faster. I mean, computer science classes could be introduced earlier. And it's a double-edged sword again, right? Because you want kids to play outside. You want them to become really social creatures. But they love living online. You know, you look at how much money spent on V-Bucks with Fortnite and how much money's going there. So, look, what's going to be taught online is that everything is going to be taking place, probably teaching in some type of metaverse thing. But still, though, you got to zoom out. You got to play outside. There's always a healthy balance, as physical health comes first. And I want everybody to know that, too, right? It's, you don't have your physical health, and Naval is a good preacher of this, then you're only worried about your physical health. You have your physical health, and you can worry about 10,000 other things. But so yeah, to your question, what do I want them to teach? Anything with self-sovereignty, personal finance, computer science at a younger age, and take care of yourself and how to cook.
Well, speaking of like all in real life or not like a non away from keyboard experiences, as they say, like when you're not at your keyboard, someone wonderfully explained this to me. He's I forget what his official title, a logistician for some of these for like World Health Organizations and some Red Cross type of organizations and everything, and helping across borders. And I always like to talk to him and get kind of his insight in the rest of the world, as we're down here in Florida. And he's like, you know, you business people don't really get that business physics, the earth, it's all energy, right? It's all, we're all using the same energy. So he beautifully claimed, he's like, for the first time ever in the past few years, Earth has felt competition with the metaverse or the internet. So now it's like you had no choice but to go play outside. Earth was your only choice, this beautiful place. But we took it for granted because it was always going to be here. It's our only choice. But now, because we have somewhere else we can go to that competes with our time, Ready Player One was like a huge moment for people to think, is that what the world is going to look like in the future? Now cities are buying up, you know, spaces to create, you know, beautiful. We've never seen $100 million plus city beautification projects before. It's just cities are now competing with this like green space. Yeah, we saw it like in the past decade or two, but it's really different now. Earth is competing for us.
Yeah. No, look, it's really shined a light on that too. That's like, okay, we talk about some energy consumption here. There's a lot of stuff going on with ESG, global warming, you know, all this can be really put on a blockchain too and be traceable and everything like that to create a better outcome. That said though, it's always going to be two sides here. So to me, looking at corporations getting into ESG, a lot of it's for show, right? They have to have a stamp. Yeah. They're going to get in the metaverse, but they're really buying it for ad space. You know, they're not going to change. The way they deliver it changes, but at the end of the day, they still just want their profit. They want to beat earnings each quarter. That's all they care about, living quarterly. But really, the younger population, I'm going to go back to this, the smartest minds, the ones that are living in this right now, see things differently and understand we got one Earth. All right, could have been screwed up before, but let's fix this. And let's also figure out this technology that's going to connect us more and distribute value to the people building it, using it, and maintaining it. It's like, how crazy is that, right? What a crazy concept. And it's really taken us this long, but I couldn't be more excited about the future. You know, really the smartest people I know are working in the space. You have some of the dumbest people too. Don't get that wrong, that are in the right place, right time, coming in for a money grab. But anybody that's spent time in the market, you're going to get wrecked a couple times. You know, since 2015, I bought some Bitcoin, some Ethereum. You never buy enough. You always sell too early, but you got to get in love with the technology and see where it can really go. And then you just time in the market beats timing the market. And at the end of the day, we're still early. We're still very early, and there's going to be a lot of new innovations. And I think we're in a great position. And Charlie, I couldn't be more pleased that you're part of Druid. You know, you're talking about you learning from us. Well, we've learned a ton from you. Again, your relationships, your knowledge are fantastic. And anybody else that's looking to get in touch with Druid real quick, it's, you know, our checks range from 50,000 at Launchpad deal up to a little over $1 million per deal. I'm looking in picks and shovels here, any kind of infrastructure plays to make this Web3 stuff better for developers, one, and two, obviously with better tools for developers comes a better user experience for the masses to take part in this new ecosystem, new economy, digital economy. So if you fit that bill, reach out to us. Happy to talk.
Where does Druid come from?
Yeah, so it's funny. Michael O'Rourke is the CEO of Pocket Network, and you know, we were founding this idea together. He's an advisor. He's 100% on Pocket. But his character in World of Warcraft was Druid. And he realized that he could spend all his time, and eventually he did sell his account for a small amount. But that was like the real time that he figured out that there's something here with digital assets that people want to buy. And Druid's also kind of a shapeshifter, one with nature. And I think it makes sense for where we are now as a firm to say like, hey, we're with you. We feel everything.
When I was over in Scotland, the tour guide was talking about the Druids, and I'm like, wait, what does that mean? And he explained that Celtic times, or Celtic, or it's Celtic, right? In Gaelic, sorry, the Druids were kind of like the scholastic elders that kind of helped steer early humanity pre-religion as like a people's organization, like how religion kind of organized people over the course of time. The Druids were kind of like those people, but they weren't like voted on or come from any breed or whatever. It just, if you were a certain type of person. And so that's why I feel like we all are. We're all like the Druids of the crypto space, of Bitcoin and crypto.
No, I couldn't agree more. It's funny. Like each day I learn something more about how Druid works.
Yeah, that's what I thought you got it from, honestly. That's so funny.
No, it's funny. We knew that was a piece, but really it was the simple fact that it was Michael's World of Warcraft character.
That's awesome. I need to get a t-shirt, by the way. I need to get the logo is so cool.
We'll get more swag. We'll be at Bitcoin Miami 2022. So if anybody sees me, please feel free to come up. Let's talk. At the end of the day, again, it's all about you guys. And Charlie, thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Of course. My email is, we'll have your email in the show notes, but my email is on untoldstories.com. And then any message I'll forward over to Chris or really any guests you ever see. The guests always love getting, you know, meeting some of their fans or super fans. Please go and listen to my previous episodes. Thank you this wonderful Monday afternoon, Chris. I'm excited. Well, I'll see you probably in a week or two. But thanks for coming on Untold Stories, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Ross has huge savings on looks that are 100% you, so you can find all the styles that match your vibe, from stylish skorts to jersey tees. The trendiest looks of the season will have you saying, "It's a yes for me." Plus, they've got shoes to make any fit pop. Be the best dressed for less with your favorite picks of the season. Head to Ross and save 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices. Items and styles vary by store.
She said, "Get out the chat room and clean my Glad stretch, feeling fine, so fresh."
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.